Hello, everyone. This is Mike Quinsey, Connecting the Light. My guest today is Dr. Matthew B. James, an international trainer, lecturer, and educator who embodies the principles he teaches and devotes himself to the integrity of his spiritual path. He has built an international firm dedicated to transformation and heads a university which provides in-depth education in consciousness studies. Dr. James has been immersed in spiritual studies and the science of human potential since an early age, and his subject is the ancient teachings of the Huna. Are you there, Matthew?
Yes, I am. Thank you very much for having me on the show.
You're very welcome, and I think we must start where probably everybody, including myself, likes to ask a personal question. Can you tell us first about your early childhood and how you came to know about the path of Huna?
Oh, of course. Actually, the path that I took that led me to Huna began simply with a fascination with meditation. When I was about 5 years old, I would look inside the bedroom where my mother and father were, and I would notice that my father was sitting there very still with these eye masks on and headphones on that were blocking out the external sound. And no matter what I tried to do to sneak in, because, you know, I was five, so I wanted to sneak in and give him a little bit of a startle, no matter what I would do, he would always notice that I was there. And I finally asked, what is he doing? And I quickly wanted to learn how to meditate, and that really helped launch the path that I'm on.
Yeah. So, did you practice it from that time onwards?
Yes, I did. Actually, I convinced my mother to teach me how to meditate and practiced for a number of years, and my father was very fortunate that he got to study with a very well-known practitioner of Huna, the son of a widely known kahuna here in the islands of Hawaii. And the lineage was passed on to him, and I learned that through my early teenage years all the way until I began teaching it in my late 20s.
I see, yes. So is the meditation you do peculiar to Huna?
There are definitely some meditations that we've learned in our lineage, having studied with the various families that we studied with here in the islands. And some of the meditations are very similar to those that are taught, interestingly, in many of the Eastern philosophies, meditations on the light, meditations on the inner self. And so there's a lot of similarities between the different meditations. Huna believes that there was once one teaching on the planet, that there was one path, and that if you actually look at all the different teachings out there, you can find a similarity between them.
Yes. Right. Now, you've stated that of all the systems you have studied, that Huna is the most complete. What does that mean exactly to you when you say complete?
One of the things that my father and I did was we really looked out there and we researched all the different systems that were out there. And we've worked with Native American chiefs. We've gotten to work with Tibetan monks. And there's one thing that's very unique to the Huna system, and that is that in almost every other place around the planet, Western philosophy and Western thinking came in and almost completely wiped out the ancient teachings. Here in Hawaii, that didn't happen until very late historically. And there were some areas in the islands that were still practicing and living in the ancient times as recently as 50, 60 years ago. In fact, some of the students, some of the teachers that we have that come to our workshop twice a year to teach have studied with people that were literally living in the ancient ways.
Yeah.
So much of the information was preserved and passed forward that there wasn't a break like you see in, for example, Native American culture, where there, in some areas, there's almost a 400-year break in the traditions and the customs.
Yes, I see that. So what is Huna in just a number of words? How would you describe it?
That's usually the first question that people usually ask. They say, what do you do? And then yes. when I say it, they say, what's that?
Exactly, yes.
The word Huna means, if you looked it up in a translation dictionary, the word yes. Huna means secret or hidden wisdom.
Yes.
But it didn't mean secret in the way that, you know, kids, when they have a secret, they say, I have a secret here. No, it's not that type of secret.
Right.
It's the type of hidden wisdom that some people have been able to look beneath the surface on certain things. Like, for example, you have entrepreneurs who are able to see beyond what the normal businessman or businesswoman would be able to see through, and they would be able to see a depth of information and pull that to the surface. And so that's really what Huna means. It means the truth that's out there, but that is
yes.
just below the surface of what we see as the world.
Yes. So are you saying that, you have said it's not secret in the strictest sense, but does that mean that anyone can join in with the teachings without sort of any obligation?
Absolutely. And in fact, many of the things that we teach, you know, we've been teaching in Kona since the late 80s now. We've been doing our workshop there twice a year. And we have
yeah.
people that come from all over the world. I mean, we have students that have been coming from the U.S., Canada, Australia, the U.K.,
yeah.
and they've been coming for, some of them, upwards of 12 years now, studying mm-hmm. this and incorporating it into their lives. So Huna was
yeah.
really the philosophy and the psychology and a lot of the spiritual practices that were prevalent here in the islands prior to Western thinking. That's really, in
yeah.
a nutshell, what Huna is.
Right. Now, there's another word connected with Huna that not many months ago was doing the rounds, as I would call it, through the email circuits, and I saw it come up many, many times. I don't know if I'm pronouncing it right. It reads as Ho'oponopono. Is that
very
another
nice
word for Huna? Sorry?
No, I said very nice pronunciation there, Mike. That was good.
Oh, was it? Thank you.
Yeah.
You say it so that I can hear what you say.
Ho'oponopono. And you know,
oh,
you
is.
Really had it. Oh, yeah, you had it done very well. That was fabulous.
That's good. What is it?
Ho'oponopono is a teaching here in the islands that deals with forgiveness. It is, from my lineage of Huna, it is one of the major, I guess you could say, the cornerstones of the foundation of Huna. And
yes.
the key word in Ho'oponopono is the word pono. Pono means a level of congruency or feeling right within yourself to the point where no one could shake you from your foundation.
Yes.
And ho'o means to make. So the word ho'oponopono means to make things right in your life with yourself and with others. It is
right.
one aspect of the teachings of Huna. And I guess the easiest way to equate it is many people are familiar with yoga. Yoga, most people when they hear the word yoga, they just think stretching. But
yeah.
if you actually do an in-depth study of Eastern philosophy, yoga is one facet of a much more deeper spiritual teaching. That's kind of how Ho'oponopono and Huna are related. And Ho'oponopono
yeah.
is a very powerful process.
Right. So what is the Hawaiian code of forgiveness?
Well, interestingly, in ancient times here in Hawaii, there was a different approach to gaining forgiveness. In Western thinking, we tend to just say, I'm sorry. And
yeah.
I'm sorry is very one-sided. I mean, in fact, if you try this on for a moment, think of a time where you said, I'm sorry to someone. It doesn't initiate any response. It doesn't ask them to say anything back to you. It's very one-sided, and it ends kind
yeah.
of abruptly.
Yeah.
In the Hawaiian language, there was no, I'm sorry. There was a phrase called, please forgive me. And so the first thing that I teach people is they have to rethink how they approach forgiveness with another individual, especially someone that they're in a, you know, healthy relationship with. You want to say to the person, please forgive me, and I forgive you. And that creates a connection and a movement of the energy that allows the forgiveness process to take place.
Yes.
The code in ancient times was that you forgave anyone for anything. Now, that didn't mean that if someone did you wrong that you would throw the conscious thinking out the door. I mean, you would have wise discernment as to what you did in your life. However,
yes,
it was known here in the islands that holding on to anger or holding on to resentment or unforgiveness towards another individual only hurts you. So the code of forgiveness was that you forgave people for what they did in their lives or in your life, and you move forward together.
Yes. I like the idea of that, because often when there are problems, there is a certain degree of responsibility on both sides. I would guess it's rarely totally on one person's side, unless you're talking about something that happens accidentally.
Oh, of course. And that was really, they kind of classified three different things that could take place that would be stepping over the boundaries, I guess you could say, or that three things that would require forgiveness. They were, one, hala. The second one was heva. And hala and heva were pretty simple in that you miss the path or you go overboard. And, you know, I say to my students all the time, you can miss the path or go overboard to excess any time in your life and not even know it.
Yes.
And so we all do that. That's why you forgive other people when they do that. Now, the
yes,
third one was a little bit more drastic. It was actually doing something with intentional harm in mind. Even that you forgave. However,
yes,
you didn't necessarily have to be around the person anymore. But holding on to that forgiveness, it only hurts you.
Yes. Well, that's certainly a very high principle in the Christian religions, isn't it, forgiveness?
Oh, definitely. And I've had a few people that have come through the trainings that I've had a couple of people that are of the how would you say it, of the cloth.
Yes.
Clergymen come through and actually take the HUNA trainings to find out the spiritual practices that were here. And I think that the major difference between the two is that in the system of Ho'oponopono, the person has a lot more responsibility and a lot more ability to control the forgiveness. There's less of an external force that creates the forgiveness, and you as the individual have more empowerment in your
yes,
own experience of forgiveness.
Right. Now, HUNA, you say, was at one time looked upon as the one teaching in the entire world. Now, that's some claim, but what does that mean, and is there any proof to support that statement?
that's an out-there claim, huh? Yeah, definitely. I've gotten to study with a few people, and there would be, I guess you would say, disagreement as to what the label was. Even 200 years ago, HUNA was referred to as ho'omanna, to make energy. Manna is energy, ho'o meaning to make. So the word HUNA is more of a Western label that was given.
Yes.
The key factor here is that because of how well preserved this spiritual teaching has been, how well it's been kept, and how little interference there was with Western thinking as this lineage was passed forward, what we have found is that it definitely has traces of being the closest to what is the original teaching. There is a mythology that is prevalent around especially the Pacific area, in that there was a large continent that was here in the middle of the Pacific. And you know, this is
yes,
this is more of a story and this metaphor that there was this peace-loving people that were here and that they had the most amazing healing practices and that spread throughout the world and that the teachings were based here. You hear
yes,
that mythology in a lot of different systems, though.
Yes. Well, for me, I actually believe that, because I'm sure you're referring to the period of time maybe around 7000 BC or further back, where you can find some record of the Atlanteans or the Lemurians, which were alleged at some time to have been very spiritually advanced.
Absolutely.
I'm sure you've heard of the stories. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So I think
the story was the lost continent of Mu, and they talk about Lemuria and out here in the Pacific.
Right, yes. And of course it connects with the Easter Island statues, I believe, as well.
Absolutely, absolutely. Yeah. And there are quite a few books that talk about that and discuss the importance, more importantly, the implication of that. And, you know, Mike, one of the things that I say to my students, because I have students that come from all over the world, and we had a group of students just this past September, and we were discussing the differences in all of the different systems around the planet.
Yes.
And two people actually began a debate, and one person was saying, you know, the system that's over here in the European area, this system approached it better than that system over there. And after a little bit of discussion, I kind of jumped in and I said, look, this idea, the story that everything came from one teaching is an important one.
Yes.
And I remember one of my teachers said to me that in our lives, we will encounter other people who have studied other things, that have looked at different ways or different paths to spirituality or empowerment. And to argue over whose path is right or whose path is wrong or whose path is better is counterproductive. And in fact, to progress on a spiritual path, what one would do is look for the similarities between the paths. And when you do that, you can incorporate new knowledge and empower yourself. And so I said this to these people, and they really got some value out of that. One of them emailed me after the training and said it really helped him look again at everything he had studied. And rather than arguing with what was out there, he began to incorporate pieces into his own life and really make a difference in his own personal growth.
Do the Huna believe in God, and if they do they have a different name?
Absolutely. There was a very complex system of gods and goddesses here. However, Huna and the religion were separate, just as you would look at psychology and religion being separate.
Yes.
So Huna was more of the spiritual practice, and the religious beliefs that were here, those were really taken down or dismantled. It was called a system of kapu, or the system of what was forbidden, and those were really dismantled in the late 1800s.
Right.
One of the interesting things, though, and I was just teaching over in Newport Beach, and someone had asked me this exact same question. One of the interesting things is that there was really a belief that there was one source, that there was one all-powerful source that everything in the universe came from. But you could never know that source directly. And so the gods and goddesses that they did have named were aspects of this source that you would talk to in order to get to the source. But that's really more the religious approach and less of the Huna.
That is, therefore, very much like the Egyptians, isn't it, with their many gods and goddesses?
I really think there was a misconception that these religious practices were, what would be the word, polytheistic, where you would look at a whole bunch of, it looked on the surface that they were worshipping many gods and goddesses, but in actuality it was a very simple approach in that you could never contact this source directly. So you would need an intermediate. You would need a go-between.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
I kind of equate that to people praying to Mary or praying to a saint
in many
of the Christian religions, that it's kind of like you have a go-between between you and the source.
Yes, yes, I understand that, and I think you're entirely right. Now, a lot of people still shy away from the term spiritual. How does that fit into the Huna teachings?
I had a woman in the course that I was teaching last summer ask me about that, because I was doing a talk on Huna, and this woman raised her hand and she said, I don't like this term spirituality.
Yeah.
And I went, I went, okay, fair enough. I could have debated, you know, the merits of that or whether or not the word itself was bad. And,
yeah.
And so instead I said, well, do you like the term higher self? And she said,
yeah.
No. And I said, do you like the term God or goddess? And she said, oh, no, definitely not. And I went, what about the term collective unconscious? And she said, yes, I love that term. Jung's belief of the collective unconscious was fabulous. And I looked at her and I said, in Huna, all of these are the same thing. All of these are the same term.
Yes.
And in the practice of Huna, there was a very strong belief of the theory of as above, so below.
Yes.
And one of the sayings was e iho ana o luna e pi ana o lalo, which literally means the light which is above is just like the light which is below, and that what you have externally is the same thing you have internally. It's just a different experience of it.
Yes.
And so I usually get up when I'm talking about Huna and say, if you don't like a word like spirituality, then you can replace that with personal growth or empowerment or higher self or higher consciousness.
Indeed.
And all of these people that are saying these different words are saying the same thing.
Yes. I suppose there's a connotation when you talk of spiritual things that people immediately think of individual spirits, and perhaps that doesn't appeal to them for some reason.
No, very true. You know, and a lot of people have the term that we would use in Huna is baggage. They have their own, you know, things that they've gone through in their life that will cause them to love one word and hate another.
And
Huna is less concerned about the label and more concerned about, is the individual empowered and experiencing reality exactly the way that they would want to?
Yes. Now, you teach ancient Huna using modern techniques. So what does that mean in the sense that does it dilute the original teachings of Huna?
My experience has been no, and of course I'm saying that as a person who was brought up with Western thinking. So,
yes.
My personal belief is that there is a definite effort that is going around the planet right now to go back to some really powerful ancient teachings.
Mm-hmm.
When I taught a weekend training up in Pembroke, Ontario, on the east coast of Canada, and a chief of the village out there actually came to welcome me. And we did a smudging ceremony, and we did a peace pipe ceremony. It was very powerful. I had never gotten to participate in something like that before, and it was very wonderful. And we exchanged gifts, and we got to talk for a while. And he said a lot of the young people that are in his tribe are wanting to go back to the ancient times.
Yeah.
And he said, but we can't go back to the ancient times. Those times are over. The roads are already built. The buildings are already here. He said it's an unfortunate thing to want to go back. He said, you know, if 200, 300, 400 years ago, if a medicine man in the tribe had picked up and found a lighter, he or she would have used the lighter to light fires and to light the peace pipe, even in ceremony. They wouldn't have thrown the technology away.
No.
And he said, what we have to do is we have to reclaim the wisdom and bring the wisdom into our modern life.
Yeah.
And so I'm a firm believer that these ancient teachings are powerful and they can be incorporated in your everyday experience of the world. And that, in fact, you should bring them into the world and be able to live in our modern world with these ancient thoughts and ancient teachings.
Right. So is that why you believe that there is benefit in exploring something ancient like Huna? Because some people think whatever we've ever known is actually incorporated already into what we're developing today.
That is a wonderful belief. And I say to my students all the time, there's nothing knew that I can teach you. And in fact, in ancient times, it would be said that all I would be able to do is help you remember what you already know at the deepest level of who you are, whether you want to call that higher self or collective unconsciousness. And that it's definitely an awakening of that. And you have modern approaches to these ancient teachings, like quantum physics, that for many, quantum physics has become the new spirituality. It talks about cause and effect, and perception is projection. And the law of attraction even can be looked at in quantum physics. So all of these different, very spiritual, very ancient teachings are present here in this modern science.
That's right, yes. You're talking of the law of attraction and so forth. Of course, that figures very much so in some spiritual teachings under the general heading of karma. Is there such a belief in the ancient Huna teachings?
Absolutely, absolutely. I have people that come into the training and they say, what do you think of that DVD, The Secret?
Yes.
And I say, you know, it's a fabulous DVD. It has definitely raised the awareness of people that are coming to the trainings. I've seen an increase in basic understandings of things like perception is projection and the law of attraction and focus. And to state it plain and simple, it really makes my job a lot easier, because in ancient times, people knew that if they thought something negative, that it would attract it to them. So you wouldn't have to sit down with someone. If I was teaching Huna 200 years ago here in the islands, I wouldn't have to talk about the law of attraction or karma. It was built into the way of thinking. It was kind of like today and email. Email is just a part of life. Computers are a part of life. And so it's just that thinking is just present in society, and it was present back then. So I like the law of attraction from that standpoint.
Yes.
From the standpoint that many people get the misconception that that's all you have to do, and you'll create your world exactly the way that you want it, is really not probably the healthiest way to think about things. I think that there's a lot more that you have to do to create your reality. If I sit on the couch all day thinking happy thoughts but never get off the couch, I'm not going to really get much accomplished.
Right. Now, you believe, evidently, that getting in touch with our consciousness will awaken something within. Would you like to add a bit more to that?
Of course. Huna, as many customs did, had a belief that there were three selves or three aspects of who you are. There's the conscious mind, the unconscious mind, and the higher self. These three selves made up you and who you are as an individual. The conscious mind is really who we think we are. Like if I said, hey, Mike, who are you? You might say, I host a show. If you asked me, I might say, I teach Huna. That's really the consciousness of who we are. Our unconscious mind has been studied and getting a lot more attention from psychology, from cognitive psychology, and various branches where it's the aspect of us that stores our memories, our beliefs, our feelings. Dion Fortune, who was a fabulous esoteric writer last century in the UK, she had a wonderful saying, and her saying was that there needs to be a thorough study of the mind before there's a study of the spirit, of the spirituality. Because the mind allows you to bring down from the higher consciousness all of the information into the unconscious and put it out into the conscious awareness of the individual.
Yes. Now, you've spoken of the conscious mind. Would that also be correctly referred to as the ego, or is that another part of it?
I think that the ego is a different aspect of the individual.
Right. So
I think that the ego really has more to do with what the person wants to achieve. And if you're looking at it from Freud's sense of the word ego, or even Carl Jung's sense of the word ego, the ego is really a little bit more from the Western thinking or the psychology. Huna had a much simpler approach to it.
Yes. I wondered about that because a lot of spiritual teachings suggest that often the ego gets in the way of your development.
I have, on my own path, gotten to witness many people. Growing up, I got to study with a variety of different people, ranging from neuro-linguistic programming, people like Richard Bandler, Tony Robbins, and all the way through to people like Baba Muktananda, who were a part of the Siddha Yoga Foundation, a much more spiritual teaching. And one thing that I've noticed that each of them say in one way or another is that we all will face our ego at some point. And when you do, what you're facing is you're facing the things that you want in life. And you have sometimes at that point in your life to make a decision. Am I going to express what is at the deepest level of who I am, or am I going to go for something that's a little bit more on the self-satisfying side? So I would say that Huna would teach you that there would need to be a balance between the two, that one is not evil, dirty, or nasty, and the other one is not the right way, or vice versa. We each have an ego, and we each have our own personal needs as well as needs for the whole that would be fulfilled.
Yes, yes. Now,
pretty far out there talk, though.
Right. Now, an interesting part of your Huna teachings here, you talk of the four truths, which are a foundation that you say we must experience in order to create lasting personal transformation. Tell us a bit about that.
Well, the four truths are very simple on the surface and something that you would need to practice on a regular basis. The first one is what would become sometimes referred to as the law of cause and effect, this idea that for everything that you experience in your life, for every result that you get, there is a causation. There is a, you had a hand in the creation of that. And so there's the law of cause and effect. There's the law of perception is projection. Otherwise, what we just talked about as above, so below, and that the world is a mirror reflection of you. I say to my students sometimes, to understand perception as projection, just think of a time when you woke up in a negative mood, if you were in a bad mood, and all of a sudden you look out at the world looks like how you feel inside. And compare that to a day where you wake up in a fabulous mood, where you're happy, and the world looks like a completely different place at that point.
Indeed, yeah.
There's the law of connectedness, that you are connected, for example, your mind and body and everything affect each other, and that you have this connection internally, that what you think does trickle down to the very physical body that you have. And the fourth one is, simply put, that the responsibility for change and empowerment in your life rests in your hands, that it's no one else's job to fix you. And in fact, to think that you need fixing puts you in a state of being broken. Whereas Huna would see you as perfect as you are, and how do you then learn from the things that you experience in your life to increase that perfection or to grow beyond the state that you are currently in? That really kind of makes up the foundation of Huna that would allow the individual to progress down the more spiritual path.
Yes, yes. Right. Talking of healing, did the ancient Hunas actually carry out healing in the sense that they could heal other people, say physical bodies, or is this all to do with the inner self?
It was a combination of the two. And for a healing to take place in ancient times, there were three things that you had to do. And these three things are very vital, I think, and important to us now, especially in our Western thinking. They were that, let's say that I was going to provide some work for someone to help facilitate a healing. Then it didn't matter whether I worked with herbs or if I worked with energy or if I did hands-on, for example, massage or body work. The first one was that you always got permission. So you would say to the person, do I have permission to work with you?
Yes.
The second one is the person receiving the work would have to acknowledge that any energy that takes place doesn't come from me, the healer. It comes from anyone. It comes from an external source. It doesn't come from the individual. And third, that the person is really, through their own ability, creating the healing themselves. And these three requisites really helped to keep, I think, a level of humbleness, and maybe even, Mike, I would say the ego in check, because a lot of people, if you look historically, when they produce wonderful, fantastic results, they tend to take credit for it. And in the Huna system, you wouldn't be able to. The energy didn't come from you. In Western thinking, we so look outside ourselves for that magic pill, you know? Here in the U.S., we want the pill that will help us lose weight while we sit on the couch eating bonbons, watching our football. And the problem is that there's no pill that's going to fix everything.
No.
The quick fix that everyone's looking for does exist. We, the individuals, are the quick fix. The catch is that you need to practice this every day of your life. Huna is like a tool. If you take the tool and you throw it in a shell and a drawer and shut the drawer, the tool is not going to do you any good. If you take this tool that is Huna, you have this quick fix and you need to work with it every single day of your life.
Yes, yes, indeed. Now, what do you mean by saying that physical manifestation is critical to any spiritual path?
The physical manifestation is what? I'm sorry, I missed the last part.
Is critical to any spiritual path.
I really like to make sure that I quote Dion Fortune in this, because I did a radio show a while back where I talked about spirituality and success. And I said that we can, as individuals, pursue a very spiritual path and be very successful. And a lot of people were, a lot of people had this conception, this misconception, I would say, that to be spiritual, you have to be poor. Or I even worked with one lady at one point, and she said that her spiritual teacher taught her that money and the physical body are evil and that they're dirty.
Really?
And I said, you know, from a Huna perspective, if everything comes from this one source, and this source is benevolent, it's magnificent, then everything that is an expression of this source would be wonderful. It would be beautiful. So the physical body can't be evil, dirty, or nasty. And Dion Fortune said that the descent into matter had to be complete before the ascent to spirit could begin. And in essence, what she was saying was that a person has to fully come down from the spiritual to the mental to the emotional and the physical body and live the physical body before they would be able to create a foundation to move back towards spirit. And a lot of people who avoid the physical and think that the physical realm is this bad place, what they're really doing is they're not creating a foundation to move back up to a more spiritual teaching.
Yes, I understand. So what would you say to our listeners who might have tried a number of personal growth systems or spiritual paths, yet can't seem to achieve the changes in the lives that they desire?
I would say that you have to find the path that most resonates with you.
Yes.
Everyone has their own path. Everyone has their own journey to take in this lifetime. And of course, you know, I'd love to say, well, come, you got to come do Huna then. That's the simple answer. But no.
Why not? Yes.
Why not? I come to Hawaii. It's warm over here, whereas most of the rest of the northern hemisphere is a little cold right now, apparently.
Yes.
No, in all seriousness, everyone has to find their own path that resonates with them. I think that a lot of people look outside themselves and they look at the teacher or the trainer and they say, well, the teacher got such fantastic results. This must be what I should do. And yet if it doesn't sit right with them, it doesn't matter what amazing results anyone else gets. It matters what amazing results you as the individual get.
Of course.
And I really think that the problem in many different approaches is that the person doesn't understand what role they play in creating their own change. It's back to this, we're looking outside ourselves to have someone else change us.
Yeah.
And you really need to find something that teaches you that you are the agent of change in your life and totally responsible for the results that you get.
Yes. Now, apparently, Huna can harness the power of the mind. I'm sure you'd like to say something about that.
I do believe that there are many teachings out there that can absolutely harness the power of the individual. What has kept me teaching Huna, and you know, I've studied so many different things, and I'm wrapping up my dissertation in traditional psychology. So I've even looked into Western psychology to see what tools are present there, and I haven't found anything that can compete with the teachings of Huna from the standpoint of how empowered the individual becomes.
Yeah.
One of our students, David Shepherd, and David teaches in the UK. He lives in England, and he had done all of our trainings, and one of the most successful students, and one of the people that I learned a lot from growing up. Dave used to say something very interesting. He used to say that people tend to look for others to help them change. And one of the most difficult things as a teacher is to get them to look inside themselves to create their own change. And that really these tools are just tools that, when applied, allow you to tap into the power of the mind so magnificently that you really take more control over your life. And then something like the law of attraction truly does work because you know the power that you have within yourself to create your reality.
Yes, indeed. It sort of fits in with the expression that you can be anything you want or have anything you want.
Very true. I think I know this is quoted in so many different places. I think Henry Ford was one of the people that originally said, if you think you can or you think you can't, you're right.
Yeah.
So when you believe that you can do something, it absolutely will make a difference in your life. And
I think
Huna says that you have to have that foundation where someone could come up to you and say, you're crazy. And the response is, that's fantastic. As long as you're getting your result, then that's okay.
Yeah. Now, here's an interesting aspect of Huna. You claim, or they claim, that it can heal the past. I'm sure we'd like to know what that's with reference to.
There are definitely a lot of techniques. Ho'oponopono is one of the examples of the techniques where an individual can tap into this ability to heal the past and to heal relationships in their life. In Western thinking, when something negative happens, we tend to wrap it up into this black bag and push it down, and we don't deal with it. In fact, if something comes up in our life, if a negative emotion comes out of nowhere, we tend to think that that's not supposed to happen or that's not right. And I know that in my life, I've actually done this. You tend to collect this baggage, and eventually you have this big bag of stuff that you just want to get rid of.
Yes.
In ancient times in Hawaii, if something came up like that, you had tools and techniques to deal with it. So one of the first things that we do in our workshop is we do a release process called ho'oku'u, where you get into contact or get in touch with the higher consciousness, that spiritual aspect of who you are, to release these negative emotions and limiting decisions from the past. And there was a student who I just taught in Newport Beach in California that within the first 20 minutes of the training, she had a release and had let go of so much sadness from her past that there were a couple other students that were raising their hand and not getting it. And she's sitting there going, what aren't you getting? The release is that easy, and you have this ability inside yourself. And within a very short time, we were all experiencing this release process of letting go of these things that you don't need to hold on to. You don't need to hold on to anger and sadness and fear that's 5, 10, 15 years old. It's okay to let that go.
Yeah. That really goes back to what you earlier said with regard to forgiveness, and I suppose it also means enabling yourself to get rid of any fear.
Oh, definitely, definitely. I think the book A Course on Miracles says that fear is the only one negative emotion, and that all other negative emotions are derivatives of that. And I've definitely found that to be the case. And energetically, Huna says that fear is definitely the underlying cause of the other negative emotions, and that to live your life in fear is not the state of being that I would refer to as Huna. That's not pono with who you are. That's not right with how powerful you are as an individual.
That's the opposite effect.
Exactly.
Now, you've got this expression of talking about an independent self-transformer. What does that mean?
That goes back to what we were just talking about how the individual in the Huna system is empowered, that the individual is the person that is responsible for the change, and that between the conscious mind that guides the individual, that directs you throughout the day, and the unconscious mind that stores your memories and the connections to all the people that you had relationships with, that you have met in your life, your friends, your family, and the higher consciousness, or the collective unconscious mind that is the aspect of you that can tap into so much more than you are, you have the ability to let go of the things from the past that would prevent you from achieving what you truly want. And I think what people really want is happiness. I think in every area of their life, what people really want is to just be happy and to be fulfilled. And, you know, to do that, you have to let go, or you have to release those black bags from the past so that you can be the person that creates the happiness in your life rather than looking outside yourself for someone to create the happiness for you.
Yes. You talk of awakening our creativity by clearing limited beliefs and past emotional traumas. I guess that is really what we've been talking about.
Oh, absolutely. If you, let's say, for example, you have fear, and the fear prevents you from going out and looking for a job, a career that's going to fulfill you,
yes,
then no matter how much you sit down and think about what you could have in your life, that fear will prevent you from seeing the most magnificent thing possible that could happen. And so the saying in Huna is, first Noah, then Noho. And Noah means to cleanse, to release, to clear. Noho means to bring down. So, for example, to bring down the thinking that you have into the physical, to bring down the energy to do the things that you want to do in your life. About 5 or 6 years ago, I really became conscious of my health, and I weighed about 75 pounds more than I weigh now.
Yeah.
And one of the things that I noticed is that I had a lot of fear of going into a fitness center to work out and become healthy. I was afraid of what others would think of me. And so no matter how much I thought I wanted to be healthy, that fear prevented me from seeing what I truly needed to do.
Right.
You got to let that fear go first. You have to let that go so you can create your reality the way you want.
Yes. Now, time's flying by, Matthew, because it's been so interesting. I'd like to give you a few minutes to tell our listeners your website address, your email address, if you're prepared to give it out. And you can tell us maybe what is on your CD that you have and where they can buy it from. So would you like to take a few minutes promoting your own things?
Well, of course. Thank you. No, thank you, Mike. I appreciate that. One of the things that I believe in is giving back, and Huna always says that you want to have this exchange of energy, and I'm so grateful that you've had me on the show and appreciative of that, so I always like to give back to your listeners.
Yes.
And we have a CD that's a recording of the Ho'oponopono process, what we just talked about making your relationships with everyone else in your life better, and to create that own empowerment for yourself so that you can become right with who you are. And we're going to give that to any of the people that email or call up our office just to give back that energy for you having me on the show. And our website is really simple. It's huna.com, H-U-N-A.com. And our email address is info@huna.com, I-N-F-O, info@huna.com.
Yes. That's fine. I believe you also do workshops, seminars. Presumably, people can subscribe to your newsletter. Do you send out information?
Absolutely. And on our website, we have our schedule of events and where we run our trainings. Like I said, I just did one in Newport Beach. I think I'll be running one in Toronto, Ontario, up in Canada later on in April or May.
Right.
And we have our longer workshop in Kona in March. So we definitely have quite a few events, and all of that's on the website. We have a lot of events coming up. And
that's great, yes. Well, I certainly found your website very interesting. Obviously, I wanted to get a background on yourself and Huna. And I think it's quite an informative website.
Thank you.
It's been great talking to you. We haven't run out of things to discuss, and we probably could have expanded it a wee bit more. But have you any last message for our listeners about Huna?
One of the things that I always love to conclude with is an important concept, and that is that no matter what you think you are, you're more than that. A lot of times in our lives, we get locked into this label. We put ourselves in a box, and sometimes when you do that, you limit yourself and limit your ability to create things in your life. And at any given moment in your life, whatever you think you are, you're so much more than that. And to remember that allows you to tap into that empowerment.
That's great, yes. I will put a little PS to that and say that I've had a philosophy through my life that if someone said to me, would you do so-and-so, and they believe I can do it, even if I don't, I will always try it because I would have faith in someone else's sort of ideas. So I think that's on the same sort of tack. Anyway, thank you very much, Matthew, for coming onto the program. I've got a couple of minutes left just to announce my guests for next Friday. So thank you again, and perhaps in
Thank you very much, Mike. I appreciate it.
Well, you're very
Thank
welcome.
You. And, Thank you. Aloha.
I guess in time, we'd love to have you back and hear what you've been up to.
That'd be fabulous.
Anyway, I'll leave you there. Thank you very much, Matthew. And I'll tell our listeners that next week I have Richard Blackstone. It's a name that might be familiar to you because he came on the program a few months ago. He wrote a book called Nuts and Bolts Spirituality, which was self-published by him, inspired by Neil Donald Walsh and his God books. And Richard believes we are here to create a better world, so tune in with me next week and we'll have more interviews with him. Thank you for being with me today, and I hope you'll be with me next week. God bless you all. Thank you.
Almeen, the greatest mystic of our time.